It's all about embeddables on Wells Tech this week. Sally and I discuss our continuing book on website content for churches and schools, and you can embed slideshows, you can embed calendars, you can embed video, and a whole bunch of other stuff. All that and more. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to Wells Tech, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with episode 299 of the Wells Tech podcast for July 23rd, 2013. Welcome back. This is a show about technology and ministry, and we try and find the intersections of those two. And helping me, as usual, Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Hi, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. I had my grits this morning, and I'm ready to go. Better watch out.
I have not had grits in a while. When I lived in South Carolina, there was a whole grits aisle in the grocery store. Not so much here in Slinger.
Yeah, you have to kind of look for them. I find them down on the bottom shelf, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. No respect for my grits, but
yeah, they had all manner of grits in South Carolina. You could have any flavor you wanted.
So you're heading this direction, I hear. Got a big event coming up?
Synod convention starting next week, and if you're paying close attention to the intro to the show, we're at episode 299. So Sally, you know, I've been doing this for 299 times, and we're going to celebrate 300 right at Synod convention, right on the convention floor there.
That's right. Looking forward to a happy celebration of over 5.5 years of podcasting and the many, many things that we've learned along the way. It's been a real blessing.
It's been neat. Yep. Been mm-hmm. very good for, I think, both of us and hopefully our audience as well. Mm-hmm. So if you've been following along, you know that we are writing a book this summer. A book on church and school website content. So a little bit different. We're not focusing so much on the technology, but more on what goes in these websites, because you know, after a certain point, the technology is what it is, and you have the tools that are there, and you get to use those and know those. And that's really the easy part. And I think to our listeners at a certain point, that's the easy part. The hard part is figuring out week after week what to put on that website.
Absolutely, Martin. And so what we've done is we're collaborating on this book and talking through all those different things. We spent the last several weeks talking about some of the core components of your website, like obviously God's Word right up front, and welcoming your visitors and making them feel comfortable and get a feel for what your church or school is like, those kind of things. We're shifting gears a little bit this week to focus on an easy to tap into content stream, and that's embeddable content that exists on other websites that you can embed. So you can see in our schedule here, we're going to talk about pics, calendars, and video today. We have forms, RSS feeds, and documents coming up in subsequent shows.
Yep. All that stuff doesn't live on your website, but your website gets to take advantage of it through the wonders of embed codes. And Sally, it used to be a real struggle, I think, to try and find and use and learn how to plug that into your website. But now almost every piece of content out there, and we're going to talk about three in particular, make it real easy. You simply click the share button, and usually some code pops up, and you plug it right into your website. You just need to know a little bit, and I mean a very little bit, about HTML to make this happen.
Yep, easy stuff. And I have an example right off the bat. It's from Flickr, because one of the things we want people to do is be able to take advantage of the many photos of events and activities and that are going on in your congregation and school. And Flickr is a great place to host those. Flickr actually just recently gave away the farm, kind of. I think you have like a terabyte of storage on Flickr
now. Right, it's amazing.
Yeah, for free. Yep. Yeah, so just create an account on Flickr, get logged in, and you can start uploading your photos. It's easy to organize them. They have something called sets, so you can put groups of photos together and then make photo slideshows for your congregation or school website of just a particular set, which would be, for instance, an event. We've been having Vacation Bible School this week at our church, so I made a set for each day's photos of Vacation Bible School so I can share photos throughout the week. Mm-hmm. The challenge is our friends at Flickr, when they came out with this great announcement, they also changed the way you find the embed code.
Yeah, so that everything we said about how easy it is, you know, it doesn't apply to Flickr anymore.
Right.
But there is a way. If there's a will, there's a way.
There is. If you bear with me for just a second, I'm going to bring up my Flickr account where I recently attended LWMS. So I have a set of all the different ladies wearing their pretty hats at the LWMS convention. It was kind of a retro theme. And so for the Saturday night banquet, they dressed up in pretty hats.
And that's one of the tips in the book, too, is try to be thematic. Don't throw a bunch of pictures up there. Keep it interesting by saying, here's a collection that you might be interested in seeing. So you let the visitor, the web visitor, decide, yeah, I'm interested in that or no, rather than having to funnel through all the photos to see just the one maybe they might be interested in.
So you'd think it would make sense. I'm here on this set on my Flickr site that I could use this button that allows me to share. It has ways to share via email or Facebook or Twitter. And it also says grab the link. And here you can grab a link that'll bring people to this page on the Flickr website. Unfortunately, they used to also have grab the embed code. And you could just click on there and get that code that you needed for your website. It's not so obvious anymore. The actual trick to the whole thing now on Flickr is to get to the set and then add to the URL the word show. So the URL is a little bit longer and it has the word show in it. And that takes you to the older Flickr slideshow view of your set. And there's a share link there that gives you the embed code. So not just grabbing the URL, but grabbing the embed code. There's even a place, and this is pretty common with embed code, that you can customize. So they give you embed code that's sized to be and look about like what you're seeing on the screen if you're watching the video, 400 by 300. That's kind of the default size. They have some other preset sizes. So you could go to medium, 500 by 375, large, or supersized. And each time you're doing this, this long, ugly embed code is changing. So if that's the way you want it, you just grab that embed code. Or you can even enter a custom size. Maybe you want it to be 660 wide by whatever that is. And once you've changed that ratio, then the embed code immediately changes to correspond. You highlight it, you copy it with a control C, and then paste that into your website in the appropriate place. So again, the whole key on Flickr is to add the show after the set URL, and that'll get you to where you can grab the embed code. Other websites make it a little bit more obvious. So
I'm thinking Flickr probably did this because they want to drive traffic to their Flickr site rather than keeping people locked into the site where the embed code or the slideshow is embedded. And hopefully this isn't going to go away, but if it is, I guess the other option would be to create a link there, but then when they click on the link, just make sure it goes to the right set, of course, and then it opens up in a new window, so they're not physically leaving your site. They're just opening up another screen that shows them the slideshow you want to show them, and then they can close that slideshow when they're done, and then they're back at your website. So it's a little bit of HTML voodoo. You need it. You need to make that happen, but it's pretty easy to do a quick Google search on how to do it. It's really adding a target attribute on the link itself, and target equals underscore blank, if I remember correctly. So.
I think that's correct, Martin, and that's a great tip. I get that question a lot, and I usually make the rule of thumb, if you're linking to something on your own website, you wouldn't have it open in a new window. But if you're taking them away from your website, I usually encourage people to have those open in a new window so they don't lose your website in the process.
Yep, good tip. Mm-hmm. Another tip that we had related to pictures is don't upload the kitchen sink. You probably will be taking 100, 200 pictures, you know, of an event. All 100 or 200 aren't probably of display or slideshow quality. So take the time, go through, pick the ones that are good. Always pick, or always try to take pictures that are obviously a visual interest. So close-up shots are always going to be better than distance shots. You know, resist the urge to say, well, I got to get all the kids in the picture. So you got 50 or 60 kids and you're 60 feet away from them trying to get them all in. And then by the time you put this in a little slideshow on a computer screen, you can't see anybody. So resist that urge and take some good close-up shots.
The voice of the photography experience coming through there. The catch 22 with that is time, I think, yep. To do the editing, the post-production stuff, you know, the weeding out of the photos. This, the voice of the busy lady who just put maybe 250 pictures up of just day one of Vacation Bible School. So yeah, you got to weigh it all out. And I hear you, Martin. I think you're correct in saying it's kind of pointless. Nobody's going to look through that many pictures. So,
yep. So find somebody with some time to
there win. You go.
That's the moral of the story. All right. Well, it's not only photos and slideshows that you can embed, but something maybe even more popular on websites, especially church websites and school websites, is the beloved calendar. So calendars are usually a part of any content management system. If you use Final Web, you know there's a calendar built in. So Sally, what's the case for embedding external calendars like Google Calendar?
Well, I think one of the powers of using Google Calendar, for instance, is that you can easily collaborate on it outside of your website. So you don't have to have people with web access to update your calendar. You can use, you know, the external tool, and anytime anyone makes a change to it, it automatically flows through to your website if you have it embedded there. So I guess there's pluses and minuses to go either direction, but certainly Google does make it easy for you to grab the embed code. And maybe in the ebook, we'll make sure to include links to some of the help for some of these basic tools, so that if you're looking for the technical side, which isn't really the focus of the book, but we can at least link you up to where you can read more and learn how to grab that embed code.
Yep. One other nice thing about Google Calendars is you can have multiple calendars. So you can have the Altar Guild schedule and the Usher schedule and the Worship schedule, School schedule, Sports schedule, whatever. And then you can show them separately in the appropriate page on your website via the embed code. Or you can aggregate them, bring them all together to show kind of the master view. Google Calendar does a good job at allowing you to create those rather robust embed codes that allow you to slice and dice your content, and also will show you different ways to bring that all together in different views. So you can have a day view, a week view, a month view, those kinds of things.
Excellent. While we're talking Google Calendars, before we go away, you may want to check out our page on the Wells Tech Wiki for our lectionary on Google Calendar. So if you're looking at embedding a Google Calendar anyway, you may as well include the readings and things for the church year. And we maintain that. It's updated and available for new church years as they roll out. So includes readings, includes the prayer of the day, the verse of the day, the hymn of the day, that kind of thing. And that's available to include in your church calendar or school calendar for free. So you may as well take advantage of that.
Sure. So let's jump over to videos. That is also embeddable. We talked about live streaming video. So a lot of the same things that we talked about last week in that chapter apply this week when we're talking about embeddable video. But it's never been easier to put video on your web page. You have tools like YouTube and Vimeo, and those have really easy embed code links or share links where you can grab that. And all the same configuration, you can change, you know, what appears, whether it's the title or what kind of play bar appears, whether they can download the video, those kinds of things. If you want to get rid of the advertising, Vimeo has an easy way to do that. They have a premium account. I think they run about $60 a year, so totally worth it. It upgrades your space on Vimeo and just gives you that cleaner look, because you never quite know what kind of advertisement might be overlaid or even interrupt your video that's on your webpage. Sally, you've run across a number of other different, very cool video types of tools that aren't the traditional YouTube or Vimeo variety.
Right, and these may be of particular interest to classroom teachers.
Yeah, especially.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about Animoto, which is basically a way to do a photo slideshow with animation added to it. You can get free accounts for educators and up to 50 accounts for your students. So check out Animoto, Powtoon, where you can create cartoon type videos.
Yeah, very cool.
Add some audio with it or have little speech bubbles or whatever your desire is.
They remind me a little bit, Sally, of the Common Craft videos.
Sure.
You know, the very simple cartoony approach, but it's very interesting and engaging to watch those. So
definitely,
you can create your own with Powtoons.
Mm-hmm. A couple of others teachers may be interested in are Voki, where you can create a talking avatar, and they provide embed code you can add to your website. So maybe your students would want to talk about a project with a elephant telling the story instead of their face or whatever. It's a neat way to engage students. And then VoiceThread, where students and whomever views a particular presentation can add comments, audio and video type comments around a presentation. And those are completely embeddable. And that's not all, Martin. I found a great blog post, a recent blog post from Primary Tech, a teacher who's blogging about technology integration, and the title of the blog post is Web 2.0 Tools to Embed. And she has an extensive list of tools, particularly geared toward the classroom, including many of the ones we've talked about, but there are others. So check out her blog post. Maybe you want to create flash tools like clocks, calendars, countdowns, glitter text, banners, t-shirt pics, whatever it is, at Page Plugin, and it's free, she says. So lots of neat tools that are sharing that embed code easily and readily so that you can embed things right on your website.
Cool. Then there's a miscellaneous category for a couple other things that maybe aren't necessarily what we would call embeddables, if that's a word, but things that enhance the experience for your visitor. And these are relative to scripture references that you have maybe on your website. So there's something called RefTagger and Scripturizer, which will, a little bit of code you put on your page, and it'll search through your page and make any, what it views as a scripture reference, you know, a John 3:16 reference, it will make that hyperlinkable, and it'll go out to Bible Gateway or one of the other Bible sites and allow people to read the content of the Bible passage just by clicking or even listening to it, I suppose, too. So just another little a little something you can put on your page to enhance that visitor experience.
Very good. There's lots more that you can embed with embed code. We're just kind of scratching the surface with pictures, calendars, videos, and the other things we've talked about. Next time we visit this subject, which will be in 2 weeks, because next week's our special episode, in 2 weeks we're going to talk about embedding forms on your website. And, you know, that might be one of the more common questions I get. Now that we have the web at our disposal, how can we gather information with a form? And I think it's a really powerful tool that you can make use of on your website. And, you know, for anything from registrations to school projects, there's lots of uses for forms. So tune in 2 weeks to learn more about embeddable content.
Great. Mm-hmm. Sally, in our abbreviated format, that means our picks are up next.
They are. I'm excited to share a bit of a homegrown pick this week. This is something that I've talked about on the podcast before. I spent a week at Wisconsin Lutheran College doing the Google Summit for Education, and my APEX project, our graduation type project, was to create my own Google site. And boy, I learned a lot about Google sites in the process and things that have improved in Google sites since I tried it out in the past.
Really?
And yeah, my site is called Going Google. So my idea was this was something that I could share with the Wells Tech community. If you're trying to learn more about what it is that's involved with Google Apps for Education and Chromebooks and those kind of things, kind of pulling together those resources and hopefully giving them to you in a not too intimidating format. But one of the things that I learned along the way is that you can have top tabbed menus, and that did not exist previously on Google sites. So I enjoyed designing the site as well as putting together the content. And the site is pretty much laid out so that you walk through these tabs with the progression of going more and more Google. So to start with, you just need to learn about the different Google applications that are available, things like Docs and Spreadsheets and Forms and things, using the Google Calendar tool, doing Google Sites and things like that. And those are available on your regular Google account. And you don't have to do anything to begin to use those, but have a Google account, which is free. And you can even share, you know, documents and things within your school staff or even with students. But it's not as easy to manage your school unless you take the next step, which is on the next tab, where you go to becoming a Google Apps for Education school. And this gives you more administrative capabilities over all of the accounts that are part of your school. It becomes kind of like an intranet or a walled garden, a privatized place where you can use the Google tool sets separate from the rest of the internet, basically. And there's some really great videos that are out there that explain it, including this first one that I have on the page is from Google explaining Google Apps for Education. But the second one, called Why Google Apps, was actually done by our friend Dave Tess, who's at Wisconsin Lutheran College. And he does a really great job. And I think he does it in about 5 minutes time. So hats off to Dave. He's awesome. And he has a great grasp of how you can use Google Apps for Education. And then there's even a slideshow embedded there with 40 ways to start using apps in your school. There's ideas and things. So this is a good page if you're just really trying to wrap your brain around what exactly is Google Apps, why all the buzz, and what can it do for me?
Cool.
And then finally, the last component of the website is taking a look specifically at Google Chromebooks. And that's the platform that many schools are going to using Google Apps. It's not a requirement. You can use Google Apps for Education on regular lab computers, standalone laptops, whatever it may be, even on tablets. But Chromebooks is an affordable solution if you're ready to take the next step and maybe go with one-to-one computing in your classroom or whatever. And that whole administration umbrella applies to Chromebooks as well. So you can administer what the students are accessing on their Chromebooks. So it's definitely a progression. And that's what I tried to lay out on the website. So I hope
it looks nice. I'm surprised that you could make Google Sites do that.
Yeah, I was really excited and encouraged that going Google is a very good viable alternative for our schools who are looking to address the technology needs of their students. So check it out. Hopefully it will be a benefit to you. There's even a little form embedded on the last page. So if you are wanting to maybe make a commitment and say, I'm ready to go forward, I could be your accountability partner and I'm willing to do that. So
nice.
I hope that I hear from you if you're interested or have questions about going Google.
Yeah. And there's a whole group of people now within the Synod that have this, this Google expertise, not only just those people that were at the summit there, but, other people who are putting Chromebooks in the classroom and such. So
definitely.
Okay. Thank you, Sally. My pick of the week is a repick, and it is a website that I've been using a lot of lately. With the Synod office move, we have new AV equipment in different conference rooms and so on and so forth. So you never have the right cable, and cables are expensive. So it's a matter of trying to find a good source for any kind of cable you're looking for. And monoprice.com is the absolute best place, in my opinion, to go and find that stuff. You can search for any different kind of cable, HDMI, DVI, VGA, S-Video, can be USB extenders, can be converters, those kinds of things, speaker wire, projector screens. I mean, they've got it all here and all at what I would consider the lowest price that I've ever seen on these. So you should probably really look here first if you're going to buy any kind of cabling. And for goodness sakes, don't go to a Best Buy or someplace like that and buy, you know, the $85 cable, because it's probably about 10 bucks here on Monoprice.
Wow.
With no tax. So this is a great site. They have things like wall plates and adapters of all shapes and sizes, gender changers, all that stuff that you get into a situation where you say, well, this cable doesn't fit or it's not long enough. You can buy them in all different shapes, sizes, lengths, those kinds of things. So if you're setting up any kind of AV in your church or school, I would definitely encourage you to take a look here. And don't worry about the quality, because sometimes, you know, the Best Buy folks will say, well, you need the monster cables because, you know, they're gold-plated, blah, blah, blah. I've never had any problems using these kinds of cabling systems from Monoprice. You can the shipping is usually very reasonable, and you can get it in a couple of days. So avoid the temptation just to run down to the store and grab this stuff. Just spend a little time on Monoprice.com.
Excellent pick.
Picked that about 2.5 years ago, but I was with the office move, like I said, this has really come in really, really handy. So
one of the things I heard about in the office move was just keeping all your cabling cleaned up. And I think you guys were using like Velcro strips to tie those up. Are you getting those at Monoprice or
somewhere
else? No, I
didn't, but I probably should have. Now
yeah.
I
know
all that stuff there.
In our school, that's a challenge to keep those cables out of the kids' way and cleaned up and stuff. So that's just another component of cabling, is trying to tie it all up. We've used just, strong ties, but you have to actually cut those and get new ones if things move around or whatever. So
yeah, that's a good point. In fact, that reminds me, I should make a note. That should be my pick next week or the week after.
We've found
a couple of good solutions for that kind of stuff.
Excellent.
Here in the Senate office, just to kind of keep the wires off the floor and off, you know, from under people's feet, and wrapped up nicely behind the computer. Just looks a little bit nicer.
All right, I'll remind you about that, because I'm anxious to hear what you found there.
Okay,
so,
good.
Very good.
Sally, we should probably tell everybody about this wonderful Wells Tech camp that we've got coming up in September.
That's right, just 52 days away. You can join us at the campus of Martin Luther College. I was over there this week. It is so beautiful, and you want to come and visit MLC for sure. But not just to visit MLC, but to participate in our tech discussion around using technology and ministry in all areas, church, school, personal, whatever it may be. I have an iPad right here. I'd love to give it to you, because at the end of the day, we're going to be giving away this 16-gig iPad to one of the participants for free. And I had an interesting question this week about Wells Tech Camp, Martin. Someone wrote in and said, I'm interested in attending, but during the registration process, I got the impression that I need to be able to offer some expertise to the other attendees. Am I able to attend just to learn? Great question. And I know one of the things we've kind of put emphasis on is this is an unconference. This is a conference where we're just looking to have discussions around all these different topics and share ideas. So we're hoping that those participants who are there are contributing to the discussions in some way. But that doesn't mean that you can't come and contribute just questions and, you know, see what kind of ideas those spark. Or you certainly can come and just
listen. I think us techies like to get around and talk about cool technology and whatever, but the so what question is really important. So, you know, technology for the sake of technology is really bad stewardship. So it's a matter of saying, how does this fit into ministry? How does this fit into the classroom? Those kinds of dialogues and challenges are awesome. So yeah, absolutely. Come on over and ask those questions.
Yeah, bring it on. We really want to have everyone that can participate. We're looking forward to this first event, and we'll be learning in the process. And hope to do it again sometime in the future as well. So
awesome. Yep. All right. Community feedback, Sally.
Yeah, I heard from listener Alicia Cameron. Do you know her, Martin?
Your blood relative, yes.
Yeah.
That's my daughter. Yep.
Yep. And she's
did something through Pinterest, of all places.
That's right. She sent us a Pinterest link to a really cool photo collage. And, you know, to look at it, it looks like there's people in boxes in a lot of different places. And I wonder how they did that. But what Alicia pointed out was they're all photographed separately and then put together in a collage. It looks kind of like the Brady Bunch, where all these different people are in boxes, maybe looking around
squares,
at each other. Yeah, there you go. And she had a great point. This would be a really creative project to do with a classroom. So teachers looking for a fun activity and something to maybe teach some digital skills in the process. You could set up different photographers or whatever. It doesn't necessarily have to be in a box. You could do it a lot of different ways. But then using a collage tool like is available for free on PicMonkey.com to put it together in a neat format like this. I think it was a great pick, Alicia, and thanks for sharing it.
Smart kid.
Yeah, there you go. All right, next up, an interesting question came in from Aaron Guzzi, and he was kind of taking a step back and looking at the church office systems that were in place. I think they have a new pastor in his congregation, and just looking at how they manage prospects, how they manage members, how they update data, like when there's a new email address. How do you get that information to everyone on the church staff? That kind of thing. And that caused him to take kind of a critical standpoint on what they were doing currently and potentially look at new ways to do things. So Aaron basically wrote and said, what's your suggestion for church office management? That's really what the question boiled down to. And Martin, I know we've talked about it before on the podcast, but we certainly do recommend regularly the tools available from Concordia Technology Solutions. And if I can share my screen.
The server-based or the client server-based Shepherd Staff program, mm-hmm. but then they also have the Church 360 product that allows you to maintain membership online. So a couple different options there.
Right, definitely. And it's Church 360 members, which is really the membership side of it. And right. Addressing Aaron's particular question about managing prospects, Shepherd Staff does their pricing model around membership. So if you have a membership of 100 to 250 members or something like that, it's at a certain price. But prospects can be maintained in the exact same system. And until they become members, they don't count toward that licensing fee and things. So you can have a really vast prospect list and manage it with the same system and, you know, filter them out if you need to, or make mailing labels or whatever it is that you need for those prospects you're managing in the same tool set with the same command and things, so you're not learning two different systems for prospect management versus member management. So I think that's a powerful component of Shepherd Staff. We'll have links in the show notes if you're interested in checking it out.
Yep.
And then finally, I want to make mention of an email we received from Mike Weglarts, and he was concerned or asking questions about doing distance catechism type things. So you have students that are not close enough to make it in for catechism classes. How can you use technology to reach out to them with perhaps some video conferencing tools or whatever? And wow, what would our recommendation be on that? But
our
friend Google Hangouts, exactly how we're doing the podcast today. Google Hangouts has really kind of jumped to the forefront in terms of video chatting is basically what we're
ease
doing.
Ease of use, I think stability, you can have up to, I think you can have even more than 10 at this point. Maybe it's up to 15, something like that. Seems pretty rock solid. You can do screen sharing. You can record your sessions. So there's a lot of good stuff going on, and then that's all for a price tag of free. So that's one component, but obviously not just the technology that delivers the video, but you need a good video camera and a good speakerphone if you're doing this in a setting where there might be other people involved. So made a couple recommendations there. One camera that we have here in the Synod office that I highly recommend is the Logitech HD Pro Webcam C920. And what is that going for these days? It's like 70 bucks or something like that, 80
Mm-hmm.
bucks. So not, you know, it's on the higher end, but you get good HD quality and you get widescreen as well. So that's sometimes helpful in a classroom type setting. And then for speakerphone on the higher end, and it's probably worth spending a little more money on the audio side than even the video side, the Clear One Chat 150 is the one that we would recommend. You can put that in a medium-sized room and still have everybody hear you. So,
yeah, and
tools to use.
Just being someone who lives a distance away from my coworkers and has been a part of a lot of web conferencing scenarios, I can tell you it can be really frustrating if the audio isn't working well. So you do want to ensure that your participants can hear clearly. And especially if, let's say the scenario is you have a group together in one location having the catechism class and one person joining in. So it's not just the main speaker that they're going to be listening to, but the people around the table who are part of that conversation, and you want it to pick up all those voices clearly. So I encourage you to consider a solution like this, even though it may be a little bit pricey of an investment.
Yep. Okay, that it for feedback, Sally, this week?
That will do it, yes, sir.
Tell the class how they can offer their own feedback in the future.
Oh, there's lots of ways. Let me just put a plug in for our Wells Tech website at wellstech.wells.net, where along the top right area, you can find ways to connect with us, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Digo, Pinterest, and even on our Wells Tech Wiki. There's a link there where you can email us. And to the right, there's a tab that says send a voicemail. So you can click that and we can hear your lovely voice and even perhaps include it in the next Wells Tech podcast. We would love to hear you.
Please do. Yep. Mm-hmm. We should also remind everybody that we could hear their lovely voice in person if they would show up in New Ulm next week on Tuesday afternoon. I think we're going to try and start about 5 o'clock for episode 300. We've got some interviews lined up, so we're looking forward to that. And just kind of a special celebratory show to say, hey, we survived 300 episodes.
It's a milestone. Put a flag there, huh?
Yeah. If you want to tune in live, if you can't be there in person, we are actually broadcasting this over the same airwaves. We're broadcasting the entire Synod Convention, and that's livestream.com/WellsLive. Livestream.com/WellsLive is the place to go at 5 o'clock Central Time on next Tuesday, whatever date that is. So
July 30th, yes.
July 30th, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so that's episode 299. That's in the books, so to speak. And we have another Wells artist that we'd like to share with you to close the show, as we have done maybe for every show. I don't remember. I think we have Branches Band this week. Their song, The Mountain. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week in New Ulm.
just go up to the